Lecture delivered on January 22, 1986 by Firoz Mehta at the K.R. Kama Oriental Institute, Bombay, on Ahura Mazda. Ahura Mazda is the Lord of Life and Wisdom, one of the most wonderful yashts in our prayer books is the Ahura Mazda yasht. It is full of revelation. Let us begin with paragraph 28, in which it is said, "We revere the Ahuna Vairya. We worship Ashavahishta, the highest of the holy immortals, the Amishaspans." Now, Ahura Mazda, Lord of Life and Wisdom, is also Lord of Asha, for, as Zarathustra declared in Yasna 31:4, Ahura Mazda is the true creator of Asha. We may well say that Ahura Mazda is Ahura Asha. Again, in paragraph 33, we find a most significant self-revelation when Ahura Mazda says, "O Zarathustra, here in my abode dwelleth Vahumana, Asha, Kshatravairya, Spenta Armaiti, Haurvatat, and Ameritat." What is this abode of Ahura Mazda? He who is the infinite eternal has no house or palace or even a hut in space and time, no earthly or heavenly abode. His own infinite eternal being, his beingness, is this abode. Even as our heart and brain, lungs and liver abide in our own body, so also do all the Amishaspans abide in the being of Ahura Mazda. Ahura Mazda is himself each and every one of the Amishaspans, and their names signify the modes in which the one and only unitary whole, whom we name Ahura Mazda, functions. The names do not represent separate beings, for in the context of transcendence, there is no separateness, no otherness. And yet, paradoxically, there is such uniqueness in these various modes of Ahura Mazda's activity that we, in our imperfect state, are conscious of it as differences in God's workings. To us, God, as the giver of all good, is not only different from, but is positively opposed to any idea of God as the one who is responsible for evil. But consider Zarathustra's teaching regarding the twin Mainyu in his very first sermon, Yasna 31. He says, "Now to the eager ones I will speak of the two created by Mazda." Note carefully, created by the Lord of Wisdom. I say, they were never created by Mazda. Like all the perfected holy ones, Zarathustra was an unerring psychologist and a perfect psychotherapist. He saw quite clearly that the human psyche is dualistic. It was impossible in those ancient days for anyone to know that this dualism was due to the manner in which the evolution of the organism in the human species took place. Our psycho-mental energies are therefore partly good, promoting life, Gaia, and partly evil, bringing about what to us seems and feels bad, namely struggle, conflict, illness, and the dissolution of life, ajayati. It must never be forgotten that we humans tend to identify the good with what pleases us and the bad with whatever displeases or hurts us. In ancient times, people anthropomorphized or hypostatized whatever they perceived. 3,500 years ago, Zarathustra had no option but to present his clear and true perceptions of the duality of the psyche in the forms of a good spirit, Sventa Mainyu, and an evil spirit, Angre Mainyu. Compare with Zarathustra's twin Mainyu, verses 19 and 20 of chapter 30 of Deuteronomy in the Old Testament. The Lord God, Yahweh Elohim, commands Moses to say this to the people of Israel: I have set before you life and death, blessing and cursing. Therefore, choose life that both thou and thy seed may live, that thou mayest love the Lord thy God, obey his voice, and cleave unto him, for he is thy life and the length of thy days. And in Isaiah 45, 6 and 7, we read, Know from the rising of the sun and from the west that there is none beside me. I am the Lord, and there is none else. I make peace and create evil. I, the Lord, do all these things. And just as in Deuteronomy it is said, therefore choose life, Zarathustra said, Yasna 30:5, whoso would clothe himself in light imperishable, and whoso would please Ahura with deeds of truth, let him choose Mazda. Consider also Sri Krishna's affirmations in the Gita, 10:36. I am the gambling of the cheat, and the splendor of splendid things am I. And in 10:34, all devouring death am I, and the origin of all to come. And in 9:19, I am life immortal and also death. Being and non-being am I. We see then that the holistic consciousness is an all-inclusive consciousness. Thereby alone can transcendent love come into being. This love rejects nothing whatsoever, even if it is what we call evil. And it has no partiality in favor of what we call good. That is why its asha, its justice, does not function as reward and punishment, but instead, transcending all dualities, it heals, it makes whole, holy, healthy, thus restoring everyone and everything to the primal unitary whole, Ahura Mazda himself, in his radiant transcendence. Zarathustra taught that the twin Mainyu, the one life-promoting and the other life-dissolving, were the product of wisdom, Mazda. Just think for a moment. In our dualistic state, if the inferior, the ill, the miserable were totally absent, how could we, functioning dualistically, ever perceive, understand, and triumphantly realize the supreme, the healthy, the blissful? Evil is the challenge presented to us to transform it into the good. We are able to perceive good as long as we are dualistically conscious, only by its contrast with evil, for evil hurts us, good heals us. How could we grow in purity, intelligence, and in godliness in the absence of all evil? You see, then, why Zarathustra taught that through the activity of the twin Mainyu, creation's purpose is fulfilled. Yasna 34, Tarapurvala's translation. It may be argued that if evil plays such an important part in our lives, why should we strive to be free of it or to transform it into good? Tied up with this question is the question, how did evil first come into being at all? Zarathustra himself gave no explanation, or if he did, ruthless, invading Macedonians and Arabs, Turks and Mongols destroyed all traces of it during a period of 1,000 years. Zarathustra himself just starts off with stating the obvious fact of the existence of evil and attributes it to an entity spirit of evil, Angre Mainyu, created by Mazda, irreconcilably opposed to its twin, the spirit of good, Spenta Mainyu, which is Ahura Mazda's own Holy Spirit. In those ancient days, no one knew anything about the evolution of the human organism. You may recall that in my previous two talks, it was suggested that in this scientific age, we may speak of Ahura Mazda's creative power, his kshatra, as primordial, undifferentiated creative energy, holding in potentiality within itself the entire cosmos that emerges out of it through the activity of that creative power. Through such activity, The undifferentiated energy differentiates. There is first its involution through increasing concretization into matter and the accompanying imprisoning of the all-enlightened divine consciousness into a state of dormancy, into the darkness of forgetting its own divinity. Then follows the emergence out of that state of ignorance through the evolutionary process, especially through the human species. Now the whole history of the development of the human organism is locked up in man's brain, and its present structure discloses all the stages through which it has passed. Its oldest part, the brain stem, deals with heartbeat and respiration and other basic functions for bodily existence. Surrounding this is what is called the R-complex, which evolved over hundreds of millions of years in our reptilian ancestors. So we inherit the characteristics of the reptilian stage, such as aggressiveness, claim to territory, fear, ritual procedure, and social hierarchy. Surrounding the R-complex is the limbic system, or mammalian brain, evolved tens of millions of years ago in ancestors who were mammals but not yet primates. The reptiles were egg-laying creatures, but the mammals who came after them bore live young and were characterized by concern and care for their young, by emotions and moods. So, we inherit the characteristics of the mammalian stage, such as love and care for family and friends, our basic emotions derived from attraction and repulsion, and the urge for dominance, and moods of depression and sulkiness and exaltation, deriving from failure or success in obtaining or being frustrated in our desires. Outside the limbic system is the cerebral cortex, evolved in our primate ancestors over several millions of years. These primates gave rise to the hominoidea and the hominids, from whom we are descended. The African apes, the gorilla and chimpanzee, are closely related to hominids, Australopithecus in Africa, and the Asian ape, the orangutan, Pongo, to Sivapithecus in India. In man, the cortex plays the major role in our mental activities, such as critical analysis, ideas, inspirations, reading and writing, music and mathematics, and our whole cultural and spiritual life. Thus we can see that the evil-doing side of our nature is inherited from our animal ancestry in the evolutionary process. It is not due to any foul fiend created by Mazda. It should be noted that with every forward evolutionary development by the organism, there is an increasing liberation of our consciousness due to the fact that the organism is the apparatus through which transcendence manifests itself. The more evolved the organism, the subtler and profounder is the freedom and functioning of pure mind and consciousness. Now, our present discriminative and analytical consciousness is largely conditioned by and restricted to the psychophysical organism, the person who sees, hears, talks, and does all that is involved in daily life. In this process, there is an evolution of consciousness taking place very, very slowly, which is of the nature of an awakening to reality, to truth, culminating in the full awakening in holistic consciousness. Until then, we are in a state of sleepiness in lesser or greater degree. This is our state of ignorance, the real and deep avidya, and this is the source of evil. Ignorance is of two kinds, worldly and spiritual, concerned respectively with the brain and consciousness. Worldly ignorance is the brain's ignorance of academic knowledge, science, art, philosophy, law, etc., and its ignorance of all the practical skills for daily living, such as one's own professional work, taking care of one's health, domestic matters, and general good behavior, socially and as a citizen. This ignorance is dispelled by technical, specialist, or general worldly knowledge, apara vidya. Spiritual ignorance is the absence of clear consciousness of the supreme truth of God or ultimate reality, of the purpose or purposes of our existence, and the way to the fulfillment of our true goal, namely holistic consciousness and living the human life beautiful. This spiritual ignorance is dispelled by wisdom, paravidya, which is not an acquired knowledge, but is a flowering out of consciousness through living the virtuous life into union with truth. However brilliantly learned, clever, and worldly wise a man may be, he is not wise in the religious sense. Wisdom is a spiritual quality and energy of transcendental power. It is intimately associated with purity of heart and mind, with flawless virtue, with immeasurable love, with divine vision, with truth that puts all worldly knowledge into the shade, with serenity that remains unshaken under any and every circumstance, and with bliss beside which any and every sensational ecstasy or delight is like a tear-laden misery. No mortal knows the ananda of God. The best and greatest works of the clever, learned, and worldly wise are but finite and temporal, doomed to death sooner or later. The fruits of wisdom belong to the infinite eternal. Never forget that half of the name given by Zarathustra to God is Mazda, wisdom. In speaking thus of wisdom, what have I tried to put before you? I have put before you Vahumana, Ashavahishta, Kshatravairya, Armaiti, Haurvatat, and Ameritat. I have tried to affirm Zarathustra's own personal realization of his transcendental vision and union with Ahura Mazda in all his experiences and states of perfect communion with eternal God in full holistic consciousness. When we are quite clearly and fully conscious of something, that something will express itself naturally and spontaneously, inevitably and invariably, in all our thoughts and feelings, words and actions. Being clearly conscious is quite different from holding a mere thought or belief. The latter has little potency, if any, for good, though it can be a power for ill-doing. Clear consciousness is the consequence of true insight, and whatever action is born of truth is a mighty power for good. If, for example, we are truly conscious of love, transcendent love will embody itself and express itself through our whole organism and all its functioning. Our brain may well be unaware that love incarnate is manifesting itself thus, because we tend to take for granted what we actually are, or what we have become, where virtue or godliness is concerned. In that state of universality, of perfect holiness, nothing obstructive or hurtful happens to disturb the peaceful flow of unegoistic living. To mention a worldly illustration of this, if you are born with a gift for poetry, your words and thoughts will tend to be poetic. Others may see and benefit by this, but you yourself are likely to be unaware of it, just as a beautiful baby is unaware of its own beauty, or a jasmine or rose does not know its own exquisite perfume. I trust we can now understand that evil originates from the organism's spiritual and worldly ignorance, and that it is necessary to transform evil into good in order that holistic consciousness may come to fruition. For it is one of the main goals of the evolutionary process for the human species. The wise Zarathustrian will voluntarily and joyously cooperate with this process. How does he do it? By Asha. Zarathustra declared, Yasna 43:9-10, I will esteem Asha above all. So do thou guide me to Asha, for which I have yearned. Each of the Amishas painters has been called Lord of Asha. In the later Avastan texts, devout worshippers express the wish, Yasna 60:12, through the best Asha, through the highest Asha, may we obtain a vision of thee, may we draw near to thee, may we be in perfect union with thee. Yasna 71:11 affirms, there is only one path, the path of Asha. And what is the happy fruit of treading the path of Asha? Zarathustra declares, Yasna 47:1, unto him who, moved by the call of the Holy Spirit and the Divine Mind, expresses Asha in deed and word, Ahura Mazda, through his Kshatra and Armaiti, will bestow Haurvatat, supreme well-being, and Ameritat, immortality. We all know that the most succinct and shortest translation of Asha is Humata, Huksa, Huashta. Good thought, good word, good deed. But it is so easy to use the word good rather glibly. In my first talk, it was pointed out that the hungry lioness who springs on me to feed herself and her brood is an Asho lioness, because she is acting according to the law of her being. She is a mammal. It is the law of mammals to love and care for their young. This love and care can develop and has developed in us humans to reach the transcendental state of sacrificing even one's own life where it is right and proper to do so. So we must understand the word good in all its deep meanings and implications. The practice of Asha is a lifelong task. First, let us see that vices or evil qualities in action indicate that our own psychophysical energies have been harmfully, immorally, and stupidly expressed. Virtues indicate the opposite. Then we shall see that our task is not to fight against or destroy evil, for such fighting means that we are in a state of civil war within ourselves, and that only strengthens the enemy, believe it or not. War always breeds war. In this very special case of war within ourselves, our task is to observe and understand the enemy, understand evil, understand Ahriman so intelligently, so completely, and so compassionately that we transform the wrong and unhealthy expression of our own psychophysical energies into expression which is pure, truthful, loving, wise, healthy, and beneficial to oneself and to everyone else, and which is beautiful. The Asho life is the life beautiful. Note how in the Ram Yasht, paragraph 40, the young virgin prays for a husband. Grant us this boon, that we may obtain young and handsome husbands who will treat us with kindness all our life. Wise, learned, eloquent husbands who will give us offspring. And all the world knows that the young hero seeks the most beautiful maiden as his beloved wife. Beautiful in his eyes, of course. Holiness and true beauty are inseparable. A few minutes ago, I mentioned that in the state of universality of perfect holiness, nothing obstructive or hurtful happens to disturb the flow of unegoistic being. Unegoistic being means that you are no longer afflicted by separativeness or isolativeness in your consciousness. You are well awake to relatedness between yourself and the rest of the world. As long as self-consciousness is separative and isolative, one's whole living process is marked by selfishness. When separativeness and isolativeness have disappeared, then you realize the blessedness, the incredible beatitude of true selflessness. This is the very heart of Ashoi. For in the permanent absence of selfness, the main source of all conflict and disharmony, of sorrow and evil, has disappeared. And then Vahumana functions freely and powerfully in you. To him who has realized selflessness, the expression of all his psychophysical energies in thought and feeling, word and deed, is pure, true, wise, good, and beautiful. In your selfless state, you are one with Ahura Mazda. The Supreme Lord, in all his divine perfections, Vahumana, Ashavahishta, Kshatravairya, Armaithi, Haurvatat, and Amaritat, is incarnate in you and functions freely through you, even as it did through Zarathustra. You are at last the true Zarathustrian, the perfected Holy One, the full-fledged human in whom the purpose of existence has been fulfilled.